First, think about all the things at the grocery store you might see labeled all natural or organic or additive free. You might reach for those products thinking they're better for you. The idea that natural stuff is inherently better for us and or safer doesn't always match up with reality, though. It's something called the appeal to nature fallacy. The appeal to nature fallacy has shown up during the pandemic, too. The idea that natural immunity is better than the immunity you get from a vaccine is a common anti-vaccine argument. We're talking now with a behavioral scientist who wrote about this appeal to nature fallacy and how it affects public health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you prefer to buy natural products and foods? What does natural mean to you? Is there some benefit from it that you've pursued and think is definitely legit? Or do you think it's often a marketing gimmick? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Kelly Peters is CEO and co-founder of BE Works, a behavioral science think tank and a lecturer of applied behavioral science at the University of Toronto. Kelly, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I just gave kind of a broad definition of this appeal to nature fallacy. Can you give us some examples that we might encounter in our everyday lives?
Yeah, we regularly think that when something is natural, that it is all better. But I think that you actually nailed it when we called it out for what it is. Often it's a marketing gimmick. There isn't anything that is inherently better in something that's all natural. And yet that really goes against our intuition, doesn't it? Doesn't it just sound like something that's all natural? Doesn't it just sound like it has to be better? But in fact, that actually isn't true.
It could be, though. I mean, somebody might look and maybe do a little more research and say, okay, this product that says it's natural, I like because I know how it's produced. It doesn't use these particular pesticides I'm worried about or something like that. It isn't always necessarily wrong, right? It could go either way.
Yeah, there's an idea that if you understand what the ingredients of something are, then you're more protected against something that's unfamiliar that might actually be unhealthy for you. Our intuition around that, obviously that's common sense. But the thing is that many ingredients that we see in our foods and in our medicines, they're actually sometimes common ingredients, but they use a different terminology that seems very unfamiliar. And then that unfamiliarity seems scary. So this is this role of our emotions that are actually shaping our perception of the safety of an ingredient. And we're not actually looking at the chemistry and making a distinction in this case about what's healthy and unhealthy. And then often we have another bias, which is thinking that maybe we have the right knowledge and expertise to be able to make those decisions ourselves, rather than recognizing that there are experts and there are other processes that help to ensure the safety or harm in those products. So our own individual assessments are not necessarily accurate.
You wrote about this with a couple of colleagues from the behavioral science world, and you refer to a 2015 experiment that found that people's preference for drugs labeled natural is so strong that even certain facts won't sway them. Can you tell us a little bit about that experiment?
This was one of the many ways that we've been trying to just understand the distinction that people will make and how far they will go just by changing the words that are used, labeling one drug with even the same output, the same effectiveness, but just changing how it's labeled, using the technical terms versus natural sounding terms, just changing the way that this is presented has an impact on people's perception of the safety and the effectiveness of a drug. And this is just swapping out different words. This study is actually interesting because even another study showed that when it comes to like adding ingredients in versus taking ingredients out could let us have a different assessment, again, of the safety or quality of a product. I'll give you an example. There was a study looking at orange juice. Just do you add the pulp with the pulp added in or having the pulp removed? When you talk about orange juice having the pulp added in, that orange juice is actually labeled as or perceived as less natural than having pulp removed from an orange juice. So this, in this case, what we see is that when we're adding a particular ingredient into something, it gives us this different perception of the naturalness of that particular product. So these are all of the different ways, again, that our intuition about what's natural and what's safe can misguide us.
Talking to Kelly Peters, behavioral scientist, looking at the idea that things are natural are automatically going to be better for us, an idea that often steers us wrong, she says. And Kelly, you and your colleagues are thinking about this now largely in terms of the pandemic and people's attitude toward vaccines. What are some of your concerns with the appeal to nature fallacy and how it might affect people's attitudes toward these vaccines that are rolling out?
Well, first of all, the epidemiological model suggests that we need to have around 85% of us on board with taking the vaccines in order for us to end the pandemic. So that is our collective and social goal in terms of what we need to achieve. And our research, along with research conducted by many others, reveals that about 10% of us are a hard no, they're not going to take the vaccine. Overall, we've got about a third of us that are on the fence. And when we look inside of that on the fence, a lot of folks are just saying, I'm going to wait and see. Looks like the vaccine was developed too fast. I want to understand what the side effects are. Or just frankly, the vaccines themselves seem scary. So that's a large group of people with whom their fears, their concerns, we need to understand. And we need to be able to address them. We need to make sure that not only is it about ending the pandemic and getting everyone on board for our society, but also it's our loved ones. If they don't take the vaccine, they continue to be at risk of being exposed to COVID-19 disease. So we want to figure out what are the biases that are getting in the way of their understanding of the positive impact the taking a vaccine will have on their health, as well as the health of us as a society. So those numbers were big. I told you 10% saying no, a third of people on the fence. So when we started to look at those reasons why, there was so much misinformation, so many different myths and misperceptions getting in the way. Answers already exist to the questions that people have, yet the biggest barrier that we face is not that the evidence isn't there for the safetiness of the vaccines. The evidence is there for the effectiveness of the vaccines. The biggest barrier that we face is misinformation and our own biases.
We're talking about the appeal to nature fallacy, the idea that things are inherently better or safer if they're labeled as natural. Kelly Peters is with us, CEO and co-founder of BE Works, a behavioral science think tank and a lecturer of applied behavioral science at the University of Toronto. Coming up, we'll look more at this idea of the appeal to nature and vaccine concerns. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something that affects your own life? Do you have friends or family members who are worried about the vaccine? Have you heard the idea that natural immunity is going to be better than what we might get from a vaccine? We're going to talk about that coming up. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with behavioral scientist Kelly Peters. We're looking at the idea that things that are natural are inherently better and or safer, and how that can get in the way of public health measures like, say, vaccinations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the topic and your questions. And Kelly, let's look at the notion head on now. This is what I think this piece you were working on with your colleagues really leads up to. Some people looking at a vaccine, and I've heard this for flu vaccines, definitely we've heard it out there for COVID-19 vaccines, the idea that, no, I'm better off letting my natural immunity build up, not to the stuff I get from a vaccine. Could you talk about that idea and where you see it going wrong?
Yeah, now this is obviously where we need a medical expert to talk about how that works, because I don't have the medical credentials to explain the immune system, but neither do my friends on Facebook have that medical expertise either. So what I do is I look to what the top researchers and medical experts say, which is that our own immune system just will not have the strength to move fast enough and strong enough to combat the impact that COVID-19 would have on our system. Medical experts have done this analysis and have chosen the path that is best for us, which is to get the vaccine.
Well, and you write that maybe a rebranding in some ways is in order to talk about the vaccine. Instead of doing that, say, the natural immune response enhanced by or triggered by the vaccine. Is something as simple as that, you think, something that would help the conversation?
I absolutely do. This is where understanding how we make decisions and the things that influence our shape, our perceptions, there's a whole science called behavior science, which understands these fears and emotions that we have. And often that's what's missing. We've got the hard science and we've got policies that are being made, but no one's taking into consideration how we feel about these things. No one's taking into consideration our fears and our anxieties. And these things have a big impact in terms of our understanding the information that's being presented to us. So your idea of presenting the vaccines as, you know, giving them that label and using that bias that we have of natural makes us feel better. And so if we were to call these natural immune boosters, that's actually not a bad idea.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Nick is with us in Slinger. Nick, hi.
Oh, hi there.
What do you want to bring up, Nick?
Well, I'm a public school teacher in Wisconsin here, living in Slinger, and I think my point is that terms like all natural are misleading, and also that you don't know they're misleading unless you have education. And we used to have an advertising unit where we even taught what words, thanks to organizations like the FDA, have meaning, like low fat, and some things really do carry weight. However, some, like all natural, totally meaningless. So again, just throwing out there the idea that education, support it. We're trying to do a job with these things that hopefully we don't have to have, public radio, thankfully, to show us those things or teach us about those things. So keep teaching about them. They need to be taught about.
Nick, thanks a lot for the call. So Nick is teaching his students, Kelly, some, I guess you could call it consumer literacy on the kind of labels we're talking about.
Oh, well, first of all, thanks so much, Nick. We all appreciate the work that you're doing teaching the next generation. And I think a huge shout out to you for carrying the mantle on that, literacy. That's something that we've actually found and how important it is. In our research, one of the things that we did was we looked at how strong the science knowledge was of people. We asked them questions like, is an electron bigger or smaller than an atom? So we asked questions like that. But we also asked people questions like some math questions. If a pond is covered with lily pads that are doubling in size every day, and on the 30th day that lake is filled with lily pads, how many lily pads were in the lake on the 29th day? Now, some of you might be wondering, wait, how do I get the answer to that? But if it's doubling every day, then the day before it would be halfway covered. So those are really interesting kind of word puzzles that help us understand how people think when they're approached with different problems. And then last but not least, we looked at things like how critical people are when they're evaluating information. Do they use critical reasoning skills? What we found was that first category, that science knowledge, we found that was low. with people that were highly skeptical about the vaccines. We found that the ability to use analytical reasoning to approach the word problems like the lily pads covering the lake, we found that people made a lot of mistakes when we gave them those kinds of problems. And then last but not least, when we asked them to do things like evaluate belief over evidence, they generally did quite poorly on those attributes. So these three things, the scientific knowledge that we have, the kind of analytical reasoning that we use, and our willingness to engage in critical thinking, all of those combine to make us more vulnerable to misinformation. And so what Nick is talking about in needing this kind of work in the classroom, over the past decade, teachers and schools having this in their curriculum continues to have to give way for other kinds of learning. But we would, our research would show that this is actually something that's contributing to the pandemic of misinformation that exists in our society. So understanding that all natural is a gimmick is the beginning of the kind of thing that we need to examine as a society.
Very briefly, as we wrap up, Kelly, do you think we need more behavioral science type thinking in our public health initiatives?
Absolutely. And I think that we all need more behavioral science. We all need to recognize the role that bias plays in shaping and perhaps leading us down the path of misinformation. Just remember, scientific thinking doesn't come naturally, and yet we need to work very hard to bring science into the way we understand the world.
We'll leave it there for now. Kelly, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Kelly Peters, CEO and co-founder of BEWorks, a behavioral science think tank and a lecturer of applied behavioral science at the University of Toronto. She joined us for a look at what's called the appeal to nature fallacy and how it could affect public health. More than 6,500 Wisconsinites have died from COVID-19 in the last year, but the heaviest toll has fallen on Native Americans, who are dying at the highest rate from the virus. Several weeks ago, Bad River tribal elder Joe Martin Rose died at the age of 85 because of complications from the virus. As Danielle Kading reports, Rose was a light in the lives of many within the Bad River community and beyond.
Joe Rose was the first person to welcome Patty Lowe to the Bad River community when she reconnected with the tribe 45 years ago. Lowe is a Bad River tribal member, but she grew up in Milwaukee.
He became like a second dad to me. Everything I learned about the Ojibwe, I learned from Joe.
Rose grew up on the reservation during a time of kerosene lamps, outhouses, and wood heat. He learned about plants and medicines from his grandfather, gaining an appreciation for the natural world. Lowe says that's something he passed on to all who knew him.
Good communities have a center, and Joe Rose was the center of Meshkezibi, Bad River.
Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says Joe was an encyclopedia of knowledge about the history of the Anishinaabe people and their cultural practices. He taught people to live in a way that would benefit those for seven generations to come.
Joe was a compass point that always helped us remember our bearing. And from a community perspective, you know, all of our elders are real sacred because they give us those tangible ties to the past and help us remember where we came from.
Rose passed on his teachings to Bad River youth and through a Native American studies program that he led at Northland College in Ashland. That's where Mick Isham first met Joe as a student more than 30 years ago.
That guy saved my life, and I'll never forget it because I swear I don't know where I'd be without him.
Isham, whose dad is Native and mom is white, remembers struggling with his identity. It was also around the time protesters gathered at boat landings to hurl insults and rocks at tribal spearfishers seeking to defend their federal treaty rights.
I couldn't figure out how they were not throwing punches and things like that. And Joel explained to me, basically with a European proverb, you catch more flies with, what is it, honey than vinegar or something like that. And when they go well, you go high.
Joe would defend those rights and the natural resources on which they relied throughout his life. During a contentious debate over iron mining, he and other tribal members traveled to the state capitol in 2012. He, along with drummers from Bad River, protested a Republican bill that weakened environmental standards and sought to pave the way for a more than $1 billion iron ore mine proposed upstream from the Bad River Reservation.
We can't put any price on the wild rice or any of those other resources that a hunter-gatherer society would use. So this mine is not going to happen. I don't plan on losing this one.
Former Democratic State Senator Bob Jouk says that's when he first got to know Joe, who invited him and his Republican colleagues to Rose's Roundhouse on the reservation.
He really left us with an indelible impression of the many years of mistreatment of the Native American people to allow us to feel captivated by a sense of what their life has been like.
Lowe says Joe was a fighter and a pillar of strength. When he first contracted the virus, she says he got better before taking a turn for the worse. Losing someone to the disease is always heartbreaking, but she says it hits tribal communities even harder.
To lose those elders who can speak the language and know all the truths embedded in that language is so devastating.
Bad River tribal member Dylan Jennings says many are still in shock, but he knows Joe would be proud to see community members continuing his legacy.
He's made a huge enough impact to where his memory lives on through our language being revitalized and our cultural way of life and our ceremonies being revitalized and still being carried forward.
So that those teachings will live on for the next seven generations. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can find more coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic here in Wisconsin online over at WPR.org or using the Wisconsin Public Radio app.